Please do the intro.
I got it.
Very well.
Murder Take dog. A warning.
Take it, murder dog.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay Sit and Stay, mere feet above sea level at Intergalactic Canine Studios. We loosen your leashes, unlatch those cage doors, and distract your handlers to keep the shock collar of statism from being clamped down on your neck. Can you feel it? Is it working, Michael W. Dean, Lisa DeLasio, and Randy England?
Yeah.
Woo!
I yes. Like that.
Computers are an interesting mix of science and voodoo. I said it in 1996, and I'll say it again now.
Yeah. And the Freedom Fiends, as always, is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except who?
Governments.
Thank you. Yeah. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So how is everybody this evening?
I'm good.
Good.
Sit and Stay. Good. Is that a dog here. Thing? Is it a dog thing?
It's the name of my company.
Is it?
Jay's Sit and Stay. Yep.
I like that.
I like it too. Is that like a sit and spin?
Kind of.
Can you say that on radio?
I don't know.
Sit and spin. I think I still have one in the basement.
I actually have two in my garage. I don't want to know why you still have one though, Randy.
Because he has grandkids.
Oh, sure. Likely story.
Yeah. So it's very, very likely. You could bet on it.
So how come you could spin on those things when you were a kid, like all day long and not get sick, and now you spin on the thing and it's like you feel like you have the worst hangover in the world after a few seconds?
I think it's easier when you're sitting
down.
You
can't spin anymore. I guess.
It's easier when you're drunk.
I don't even think I could fit on one of those anymore. Yeah. Let's try to spin around on it.
Benefit of being 5'1".
Yes.
So I want to give a shout out to our new sponsor, BurgerFiend.com. Steve Miller sent me this link. Yeah. Steve Miller sent me this link. They're not really our, we're going to give them free ads. They're not really our sponsor, but they're in like Iowa or something. There's this burger. Right. Yeah. Burger place called BurgerFiend.com. BurgerFiend.com. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, me too. How do you find that? I mean, what was he looking for online?
Steve must have a lot of time on his hand.
Do they play LRN.FM over the
Cedar Rapids
music in the restaurant?
No, they should.
Maybe they will now. Yeah.
Maybe they will. Yes.
Come on, guys. We're giving you free advertising here.
I know. Yeah. You FedEx us 14 burgers. Sorry.
Ooh. There you go.
Yeah. It was 15. 14. Yeah, 14 burgers.
Damn.
Did he really? Damn. Stop. Okay. Stop. All right. So So I found something really interesting. Do you guys know about the Eurion constellation? Eurion constellation?
No, I can't say that I do.
This is EUR. No,
it's not in the sky. It's actually on your money, on your government's money. So I'm not going to say I tried to scan a $20 bill and do anything with it in Photoshop, because I wouldn't say that. But someone told me that someone they knew heard someone do that to make a meme. They weren't counterfeiting. They were making a meme. And as soon as they tried to open the image in Photoshop, Photoshop gave them a warning that said, like, this application cannot edit banknotes. Please click here for usage information. And there's a link to a site that's something called, like, use.com or, you know, like, rights to use, or I don't even know what it was, but basically, it's a website that I wouldn't go to because it's run by the world government or something.
Yeah, and it sends a message to the Secret Service.
I was going to say, probably. I bet you they're on the list now.
Yeah, and it's this site that, like, you click on the country you're from, and it tells you what the legal requirements are with doing anything with an image of that country's money. And in the U.S., it's something like, you know, it has to be low res and less than 3/4 the size of the bill, you know? So, and like, this has come up again and again and again, like people from all countries, like when, you know, Australia had new money come out recently and the local paper tried to publish a picture of it and describe it, they couldn't scan it in Photoshop because they got this error. And, you know, of course you can use GIMP or any, you know, counterfeit friendly software. No,
hopefully.
Non-government, you know, non-stateware, BIPCOTware, like GIMP is the open source one. It's called GIMP. It's started as Linux, but now it's everything.
Has anyone tried it on GIMP?
I wouldn't try it anywhere because I'm a good law-abiding, tax-paying American. Law-abiding. Did I say law-abiding? Law-abiding American.
You did say
but,
that.
So what it is there's this thing called the Urion constellation, which is micro-printing of five little green dots. I mean, I think you can see them. Like on the back of a 20, if you look really close, but like the naked eye, you know, just glancing at a bill, you're not going to see them. They're hidden in the artwork, but you know, it's five green dots of a certain color, a certain distance from each other. And like bills of the world have this, like almost every government printed money from every country has this.
Why?
So,
why?
Yeah. And it also will make it so photocopy machines can't do anything. Color copiers won't work.
Wow.
So, all I was trying to do was make a meme. It's a taxation is slavery, and had a picture.
Your friend was trying to make a meme.
Yeah.
His friend of a friend of a friend of mine that I read about on the internet in a magazine at the tire rotating store while I was waiting, while my cousin's dentist's sister was waiting for her dog to be shampooed by Jeremy.
Yes.
Yeah,
I can verify this. So we're covered.
Yeah. So the Urion constellation.
Well, so you said there's five of them. 5 points. You said what is it supposed to be in a pentagram or something? I mean, what's the
probably.
You could draw a pentagram over them. They're a little off. It's a little twisted pentagram, but yeah, it's the government's. Yeah, the government's a devil. The devil. All governments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd agree with that. Yep. But you said it's on all. You said it's on all money, like
almost all, probably. Oh, yeah.
Mostly. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
All new that money. Yeah.
How do you spell it again?
Eurion. There's a Wikipedia page on it.
Oh,
you see it?
I think so. But is it real?
Yeah, it's real. I mean, how else would Photoshop have known when you know to do this? So I don't know. What do you got? A 20? Pull out a new 20 and look at the back in the upper left, in that space there, and see if you can see them. That's where it's supposed to be on 20.
It says the word is a portmanteau of EUR, like a euro, and yes. Orion, a constellation of similar shape. Yeah, it does kind of like look like Orion, except without a waist. Like it has a little wasp waist instead of a wider waist.
Yeah. So that's your lesson.
It's all fake anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think we're going to talk about... Oh, I did want to mention that the Jackalope Freedom Festival is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License.
Yes. You see that? Well, yeah, I may have had something to do with that. Because we had Alma on the show. No, Alma Summer on the Seeds of Liberty last week. And
I like Alma Summer. I've been friends with her on Facebook for like, I don't know. She's like, what, 18? I've been friends with her for like 20 years on Facebook, I think.
I think she might be a little bit older than that, but yeah.
Although she did say that everybody of my generation is horrible at one point. She did. She said like, you know, every baby boomer is horrible, and it's all their faults for everything. Yeah,
that's funny. The baby boomer thing did come up during our conversation.
I'm the last year of the baby boomers. 64.
Are you the last year?
Yeah. Are you in that?
Well, Randy? Sure. Anybody born after the war up till, what, 64?
Yeah. There's another generation. You know what Generation Jones is? Mm-mm. This is kind of neat. I think you're Generation Jones. It's 1950, born 1954 to 65. It's like the later, or some say 57 to 65. It's the later part of the boomers.
You would be a Jones. I'm not.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's okay. You're a real boomer and I'm a Jones. And supposedly like everything is attributed to the boomers really to like your generation of the boomers, and my generation, the Jonesers, didn't have all the entitlement that the boomers had. And so we're jonesing for it, and we're trying to keep up with the Joneses, and we're fiends jonesing for what you guys had.
Well, us older boomers are going to try and get in and suck up whatever's left for the Social Security money before you.
I know. By the time
Jeremy, we're doomed.
Do you get it yet?
Hey, speak for yourself. I don't pay into that.
I don't either. I haven't in a long time.
Then you don't have to worry about it.
Exactly.
I've never counted on it. My dad always told me, don't even think about this being around by the time you're that age. So,
you know, all the fiends are self-employed, I think. Yeah. Let's think about this today. Like, everybody almost on tonight is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Lou works for a hospital or somebody, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so does Jim Jesus, actually.
Jim does, too. Yeah.
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 Yeah, they both take care of... they both help people with their CPAP and their diapers. Yeah.
But a lot of us are, which is...
Do you help with dog diapers?
Sometimes, yes, I do. I have dogs that wear diapers. I have dogs that go into heat that wear, you know, pads.
Ooh. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Wow. I usually don't let them come to my house for obvious reasons.
No more information, please.
For obvious reasons?
For obvious reasons, yes.
Obvious reasons.
This is a Freudian slip.
Are you wearing your Freudian slip? I'm wearing mine. It looks good.
I had to do laundry tonight, so mine's hanging in the bathroom at the moment. But
yeah,
but
visuals running through my mind right now.
nothing better on the radio. Most of the fiends, I think, are though. I think at least the majority are self-employed to some extent, which is kind of rare at least in the ANCAP community. The people that run around talking about being capitalists are usually very bad at the job.
Oh, I know. They're often really bad at it.
Which is...
Being on a radio show at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning doesn't fit really good with a 9-to-5
that's
job
true.
Most
that's
times.
True. Although some people do. Like Lou gets up and works. And Jim gets up and works. Well, Nathan, our editor, and Scott, our editor, get up and work too. And we're going to the market.
Thank them for their service.
We're back to talk about Better Call Saul and how you should stop saying taxation is theft and start saying it's slavery. And we'll explain it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, chasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Either.
Yes, you're not a child's toy from the 70s.
No. Not even close.
So, Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul.
First of all,
the show Better Call Saul, we all love it. So, spoiler alert. Skip the next 30 minutes. I know. I mean, like, okay, we're going to talk about Fight Club. Spoiler alert, it's been out for 25 years. All right, so... First of all, it's a spinoff of Breaking Bad, and I remembered something tonight. There's actually an episode of Breaking Bad called Better Call Saul, and I'm gonna look it up. But I think it's the one that's where Badger gets arrested because some undercover cop, badgers him into selling him some meth. Remember? That's a funny one.
Yeah, that's where he asks him, "Are you a cop?"
And he says, "Yeah, just you know." Ask me if I'm a cop and I have to say no, it's in the Constitution. Now, Randy, as an attorney, you want to respond to that?
Well, sure, it's in there.
Before, it's in there. No, it's not.
It's, I can testify to the fact that at least before, brother, before Breaking Bad came out with that scene, people did say that. And people, I've seen lots of reports where someone said, "You're not a cop, are you?" And the undercover cop says, "No." And then the deal goes down.
I think the cops must have made that up and spread that rumor like 20 or 30 years ago that, you know, they have to say that if you ask them, they have to say. No, they don't.
Yeah.
They can lie. You can't lie.
The thing that was unrealistic about it is that mostly when there's an undercover buy, you don't have an arrest right then. Because they don't want that undercover cop to be exposed. They want him to bust 25, 30 other guys.
Right.
Then they round them all up in one morning at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, good point. Hmm. Yeah, although the guy playing that, DJ Qualls, I love that actor. He's in that pimp movie. What's the pimp movie?
He's in Road Trip, too, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I remember him from. Yeah,
what's the pimp movie he's in? I don't know. It's hot out here for a pimp. That one, you know.
I don't remember that one.
I don't know.
Where Terrence Howard plays the, you know, wife beating pimp with the heart of gold. That guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Must have missed that one.
That's an age old story. It's kind of getting to be kind of a tired movie theme, really.
Yeah.
Hustle and Flow.
Hustle and Flow. That's it.
I just looked this up because now I'm putting that on my list. Maybe.
Yeah. You never seen that?
No, I remember.
It's a great movie, man. Yeah. He plays an audio engineer in Hustle and Flow. I like movies with audio engineers. Yeah, like that episode of Law and Order that Jeremy and I watched. It has Robin Williams as a murderous audio engineer. There's also an episode of Law and Order. Is it Law and Order? There's an episode where Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction plays an audio engineer. And there's murders. I think it's a Law and Order. It might be a CSI. Then there's actually a CSI with an audio engineer. I love his name. It's Disco Placid. That's the best name for a producer, man. And he's like a rap producer, but he's called Disco Placid. Yeah. Yeah, man. Hustle and Flow, man. All right. So, Better Call Saul. Go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Saul, I think, finally got his commercial out. And which is his commercials are great. Have you ever tried calling the phone number that he has on his commercial?
No. Have you?
You want to hear it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we?
I'm serious. Just a second here.
Oh, man. Great.
Let me know when you're ready.
I thought it was a 5-0 phone number.
Yeah. Get closer.
Hi. You've reached the law offices of Jimmy McGill. Please leave a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
There you go.
Get out of
Do you
here.
Think it actually
that's
takes a message?
Awesome.
I don't know. I already hung
we
up.
Should leave one. Let's leave a message.
That's funny. That's really funny, man.
That is funny.
Invite him on the show.
Do you think anyone tries to hire him from that? you think he gets collect calls from jail at that number?
Look, people order yaks online when they're on sleeping pills, so they probably call Saul.
Ambien.
And for a joke, someone probably
calling Saul.
Somebody probably posts that on a bulletin board in a jail for a joke.
Yeah.
for free lawyer.
Free lawyer.
That's great.
They haven't before, they will now.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty funny.
That's great.
Hey, as long as we're trying to get people to do stuff, that's crazy, but this is not crazy. So there's this application called Cell 411. Do you guys know about this?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Have it.
Cell 411 does more for liberty than everyone we know combined. All right, I'll talk about it when we get back. Look it up now, though. Cell 411.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
This is the smooth sounds of Lenny and the Squig Tones. All right. Cell 411 is going to change the world. It's a software for an Android phone. It's an app for an Android phone or an iPhone that allows you, or your any iOS device or any Android device, that allows you to basically set up groups to call an emergency that aren't the government. And cops are really mad about this. Like, cops are trolling, like setting up fake accounts and like putting out alerts like, I'm getting butt raped by a bunch of cop blockers at the McDonald's. Please come help me.
Oh, gosh.
But
yeah, I have it set up. I've already gotten a couple of alerts about, you know, like speed traps set up and things like
that. Yeah, well, that's when you're on patrol mode, but you can be on, you can just set it up too, so it's just your friends. But here's what I'm asking people to do is not only install it and use it, it's free, but go on the Android App Store and the iStore and give it good ratings and find the ones written by cops. They're obvious, or cop lovers that are like, oh, this is a bunch of, this is dangerous.
Commies.
This is, yeah, commies. Yeah. And give them thumbs down because they really have a concerted effort to like try to bury this in bad press. Because it threatens their livelihood. You know, they want a monopoly on protecting and serving and beating people up and shooting dogs.
Yep.
But yeah, a neighbor could get to your house quick enough to help you, you know.
I know.
Yeah, I think so, it's brilliant.
I told him he should contact, there was actually a town in Colorado, a small town like 90 minutes outside of Denver, where the entire police force quit. Today,
I saw that story, but
I told him to contact the local paper and like try to get him to do an article on cell 411. Maybe they'd never need cops again.
We had that happen in a little town in the county where I was a prosecutor once. It was only three cops. It was the chief and two beat cops. Yeah, and they were a funny bunch because you should see in the uniforms that these guys got for themselves. They were dressed up like who's the guy that out in front of the parade with the drum major uniform? That's what they look like. I mean, or like Canadian Mounties or something like that.
Did they lose a bet or something? What's that?
It was amazing. Well, the lower down they were, I mean, we're talking about a town with three cops. The lower down you are, the nicer the uniform you got to have, because that's all you got. And they ended up, I think if I remember right, the chief got busted for some weapons violation, so the other guys quit, and that was the end of that. And I don't know what happened in this town, but, you know, a town that small, I don't know why they even need police at all. The county sheriff's office is there. When I was out in Slab City, California, why they could even call the sheriff there if they'd had electricity maybe or something.
Yeah, well, when I read the article on this, the very first comment I came across was, a town of 700 people had four cops. What is there, nothing but nonstop crime going on? Like, why do you need that?
No,
exactly the point. You don't, you know.
I'm thinking it was a revenue driving device.
Well, it's to make sure that your marijuana has all the taxes paid on it and your guns, magazines don't hold more than 10 rounds.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
In Colorado.
In Colorado, is that what the rule is?
Yeah, so it was really nice today in Colorado, according to Diana Kyler, our co-host, who lives about 4 hours south of me. I live in Wyoming, in Casper, Wyoming, and it snowed today. And I got to say, April slush brings May mush. But we're going to move on to Better Call Saul. So the actor, Michael McKean, who plays Chuck, who we're liking less and less, was in Laverne and Shirley and was the singer in Spinal Tap. And his band was Lenny and the Squig Tones. Is that what you said? In Laverne and Shirley, Randy?
Yes. Him and Lenny. I mean, him and Squiggy.
Squiggy.
There was only a two-man band, and they were Lenny and the Squig Tones.
Awesome name.
They didn't play a lot of jobs on the show, but, you know, you remember that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And Laverne and Shirley, they weren't. They were spinoff from Happy Days, if I remember right.
Yep.
Yeah, yep.
Yep.
That's right.
And they were just sort of an updated, you know, Lucy and Ethel sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Isn't every show just an updated Lucy?
Yeah. I love Lucy. Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, I think so. But yeah, Chuck, though. Chuck, you know, you were saying we're more and more disliking Chuck. I don't know how you could dislike Chuck more and more, because I don't know how you could dislike him any more than I already hate him.
Yeah. I liked him at first. Like, I liked him when he was the big brother working in the law firm and Jimmy was in the mailroom a little bit. He was still really condescending, but at that point, it kind of seemed like he had reason to be. Like, Jimmy was a F up, you know? I mean, he was like basically doing fraudulent, you know, like slipping Jimmy stuff for money.
Yeah, but Jimmy was in the mailroom. That's why Chuck was decent to him back then.
Yeah, right. He was place. Well, what did he say? He said that Jimmy with a law degree is like a monkey with a chimpanzee with a machine gun. Was that
something like that? Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now
have you guys seen that Planet of the Apes promo of the chimpanzee with the machine gun?
I don't think so.
No, it's got nothing to do with the show, but it's one when they had the new shows come out. There's one that's like. It's this little clip on YouTube. Just Google chimpanzee with a machine gun, and it's like some rebels in the jungle somewhere in South America or Africa, I guess. Are there jungles in Africa? I don't know, but
yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, so it seems like, you know, like some rebel forces in some jungle in Africa, and this chimpanzee, and they're all like having a smoke, you know, between battles and sitting on chairs in the jungle, and this chimpanzee ambles up to them, and one of them hands the chimpanzee an AK-47, and the other guys are yelling not to give it to him, and then like he picks it up and like puts his finger on the trigger, and they all just run, and he starts shooting it into the ground. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Squeak tones, go.
Okay, Chuck. Why hate Chuck? The first thing that happened in the show this last week, and by the way, we should mention, and I didn't realize this till I started watching. And
that Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
I realized that before I started watching.
Oh, okay.
But this was the season finale. I mean, it's over till what, next February or something? That just... Really,
it's a bummer.
Yeah. But then they start the show out. They start the show out with Chuck and Jimmy. Their mom's dying in the hospital, and they're kind of watching, waiting for her to go. And she's been unconscious. And Jimmy goes out to get something to eat real quick. And while he's gone, Mama wakes up and is calling for Jimmy, to saying to Chuck, Jimmy. And he goes, no, it's Chuck. And she goes, Jimmy, and then she dies, and Jimmy walks back into the room after that, and
Chuck's horrible.
Chuck's horrible and says, well, Mom died, and he said, did she say anything or whatever? And he goes, no.
You know, that's the worst thing Chuck's ever
done.
Didn't
you know he was going to do that, too? I knew.
Yeah.
Until he records his confession and tries to get him disbarred and imprisoned.
Now that's the last thing that happened. Yes, well, going to the very end of the show, it all stemmed from the Jimmy changing the address of that case,
which I didn't like. I was mad at Jimmy. That was really sleazy, man. That was slipping Jimmy stuff to his family.
Well, it was,
but he was doing it for Kim.
He was doing it for Kim.
He's a white knight.
I mean, he's with her, and she's more family to him than Chuck is at this point, because Chuck's been out to get him for a while.
Chuck stole that case from her anyway. I was hoping that Jimmy would do something to get that case back for
him. That didn't really steal, though, because when you work at a company, that's the understanding, is like, you know, anything you create while working at that company belongs to the company. That's not uncommon, right, Randy?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, sure, in a lot of situations. You know, I questioned how Jimmy, when he did that to begin with, I don't know anything about banking regulations and appearing before a banking committee or something. I thought, how did Jimmy know what to do to cause this maximum hurt to this case? I mean, the mistake that was made must have cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars
while
they were delayed. You know,
He probably knew how persnickety they are about details, but I don't know if he would have known that they would send, you know, they'd have to like reassess the other property. But you know what I kept thinking during that whole scene? Bitcoin. I just kept thinking Bitcoin. Every time they were just going through these horrible hoops to open a new bank, I just kept going, Bitcoin, but Bitcoin. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know why they should go through any hoops at all to open a bank. But
right. I was thinking that. Like, government.
Bitcoin.
But then, of course, you know, the episode the week before ended with Chuck, you know, trying to prove that Jimmy had messed with his paperwork and ended up getting freaked out, what, by the lights and everything in the copy place? And yeah. Falls down, hits his head on the ground, and he's unconscious. And, of course, this one starts with Jimmy. He does it. He runs in there and, you know, giving away the fact that he's hanging around. And Chuck is in the hospital, this time for Chuck, not for their mother, because that apparently happened, you know, some years before that. But this is when Chuck, you know, starts apparently hatching this plan to mess up Jimmy and get whatever he, I don't know what his plan is right now, but he got Jimmy to admit that he had done this. And the last scene in the whole show was him, Chuck, pulling back the cover over the
in his giant hamster room,
tape recorder,
in his Faraday cage home, with every wall covered with space blankets.
Just theater, though.
Yeah, that was exactly that's what I was going to say. That was right. All part of the ruse.
It's a great length to do that.
Well, I think the whole illness is theater because I mean, didn't that nurse or that doctor the first time he was hospitalized prove to us that the whole thing is psychosomatic?
I think so. I think he's like his histrionic personality disorder or something.
Well, that doesn't mean though that he's not, it's, I mean, it may be mental, it may not, but that's still the thing with him doing all of the work at the end to make himself look 10 times as crazy. That part I think was theater anyway, just to suck Jimmy in.
Totally.
I mean, I didn't catch that.
I thought like he was that crazy, but you're right.
I knew right away. I'm like, he's doing this on purpose.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what will they do?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of seeing peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Bring that back. We're back. We're on the show.
So we were talking Better Call Saul before we left.
We're talking Saul.
Yes, talking Saul. And a couple things that we have to cover before we move on from Saul, of course, are the two huge things that happened at the end of the show. One was the Jimmy having his confession that he had forged Chuck's documents, which would be a felony, and Chuck reveals at the very end to us that he got it all on tape. And so you have that, and the big question is, now what's going to happen with Jimmy? And we have to wait till next February to get to that.
So right? with the recording, I know, I think different states have different laws about that, but I thought that wasn't always admissible.
There's criminal laws. I looked at this because I was kind of interested in that question, depending on if you're in what they call a one-party state or a two-party state. The one interesting thing about this, I mean, from a legal standpoint, is that this wasn't really a wiretapping situation because there was no phone, no electronic communications involved. It was just a conversation. But apparently New Mexico does have some law that makes it okay to record a conversation as long as one person to the conversation station is aware of the recording. So that would make it legal, I guess.
Yeah, that's how it was in Virginia, too.
That's how it is in Wyoming. I'm surprised at how it is in Wyoming. It's like, that's a lot of freedom. And that means you can record cops here.
Yes, it definitely, definitely does. Now, it's a little more complicated, I think, in New Mexico if it's a telephone call. But I think face-to-face...
Does it matter if it's interstate or not, the telephone call?
Well, federal law would probably come in, but federal law, I think, is one party also. Ooh. So one party consent, so maybe that's not a big issue. The other issue you mentioned, Lisa, was the admissibility in court. And I think it would be totally admissible in court as long as you had Chuck there to say... If all he'd have to do is say, "Yeah, I was there when he made the confession. This is him on the tape. I'll play it for you."
And I also don't know that he's trying to take this to court. He might just be trying to get him disbarred. Now, if to Maybe get disbarred, not. Is there a court hearing or is it a private thing or what is it with the Bar Association?
Yeah, somebody would bring a complaint to the disciplinary board of that state's Bar Association. So that they could get him disbarred, but obviously they don't get Jimmy disbarred. I'm thinking maybe they'll use this to force him to change his name to Saul Goodman. I don't know.
Yeah, get him to move. Like, get him to leave town, maybe, too. Yeah, get him to move away.
Well, but he comes back. Identity. We don't know if he leaves or not, but he does. He ends up practicing in the same town with a different name.
Is it possible to get back into the bar after you've been disbarred, or is that a permanent
with a different name? Or
they,
in general.
No, if they just suspended you for a short period of time, but normally they don't suspend people for less than maybe a year or something like that. One thing he could do, though, is that if they got some kind of agreement that he would leave and then he could come back later, there's always a snitch rule among attorneys that if anybody else is breaking an ethical rule, you're under an ethical obligation to report them to the bar. So if you got some kind of a deal with a guy and
it's
said,
like West Point.
Well, if you change your name, we won't report you. You could let 6 months go by, and then you could break the deal, and they could not report you at that point.
I think. My guess is why he changes his name.
Go ahead.
I think Hamlin and McGill pays him to change his name at some point. I really do.
Yeah, something like that's going to happen.
Somehow. I think they just don't want anything. They don't want another McGill that's like Jimmy. I really think so.
Well, now, of course, in Breaking Bad, though, Jimmy explains in that show why he goes by Saul Goodman. The homeboys, the Jewish.
You want a piping fresh? What do you say? A piping fresh member of the tribe?
That's what he said.
It's all good, man.
He said, "I'm a potato eater like you."
I thought he was lying too when he said that, but apparently he wasn't. And as a black man, I agree. I want a piping fresh member of the tribe too. Hey, I am 1/64th black. Don't deny my black heritage. I have proof. I have the documents from 23andMe.
Can you email me that over the break, Michael?
No. You think I can? Yeah.
We'll be back, soon. Very soon.
To talk about why taxation is slavery, not theft.
Yeah.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Yeah. Wampus cat. That's a wampus cat.
Someone forget. get to feed the Wampus Cat? Sounds hungry.
Yeah. That was a happy Wampus Cat.
Ah. Oh. It's kind of like aloha. It means hello, goodbye, and I'm going to eat you. Murder cats. Yeah. So, are we done with Better Call Saul, or do you get any more comments before we move on?
Well,
I never actually talked about the mic thing, but
the mic thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mike.
Who is that? Who wrote that note? Who said don't shoot or whatever? That was weird. I can't fathom who it could be. It actually crossed my mind that it was Chicken Man, that it was, what's his name? Gus. But nah, can't be. And you know, I think we know when Mike meets Gus. It's in Breaking Bad. He meets him through Saul. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. But if Gus left the note, he didn't meet him. And right, Gus, if you remember how hard it was for Gus ever to talk to Walter White in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, Gus
at the
isn't
beginning.
Out walking. Gus ain't out in the desert. He'd send a henchman.
Oh, yeah. He would have sent one of those guys that he probably the guy that he killed with the knife down in the lab, you know. Spoiler alert, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
You know, one of those.
Oh. Show that's already ended.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he killed more than one guy, like I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Mike is trying to kill Hector because, well, Hector's really bad. And also Hector killed some innocent guy.
Good,
yeah.
Samaritan.
Good Samaritan. Guy. Yeah. So
yeah, Mike was done with those people until he heard that, I think.
Yep. And then he went,
through
all the trouble of getting the rifle and getting it all set up. And
it's a good rifle too.
So Mike hasn't reached a point of even this guy that he was going to kill, he was going to kill somebody who had it coming. It isn't a point where he's just viciously killing someone. Like, he's not a hitman yet, which he became.
Yeah, I got to say, the most dangerous weapon in the world, well, that a civilian could... that one person can carry and that civilians can get is a bolt action 30 caliber single shot scoped rifle, a deer rifle, you know.
You mean like Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yeah, because you can kill people from a distance and get away with it.
Yeah, he spent like $13 for that rifle.
$13?
Yeah.
So I'd heard, yeah.
It was Italian, only been dropped once.
Wow.
the other thing with Mike, like I was saying during the break, that struck me because I obviously don't know the story of Breaking Bad yet, so I was just as confused as who could this be that left the note. But I zeroed in on Nacho the whole time, because as soon as Hector stepped out of the building, Nacho managed to get in the way as soon as Mike started to try to line up the shot and never left Hector's side until they went back.
That was accidental, though. That had to be. You don't think so?
I don't know. That's what I zeroed in on. So,
you know, my argument that it wasn't accidental was if he hadn't done it, Hector would have been dead and the whole note thing would have been moot. And if it was Gus that left the note, he wouldn't be that sloppy. He'd have all his bases covered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Of course, he didn't cover that last base in Breaking Bad that time. You know, the very last base that he should have covered. Yeah.
Face Off. Oh. That's the name of that episode.
That scene is crazy.
Yep. Well, and they said that one of the reasons why folks are thinking that the guy that left the note, that Gus that sent the message or left the note on the car, is that they found that an anagram of the first letters of every episode in this season's Better Call Saul work out to say Fring's back.
What?
Wow, what? How do people
say this again?
This stuff?
If you take the names of all of the episodes, all 10 episodes of this season, and you can arrange them into the words, the first letters of each episode, you can arrange them into the words Fring's back. And Vince Gilligan on the Gillian. Talking Saul,
isn't it?
On the show, the Talking Saul show after the show, he said that some fan had figured that out some time ago. And that was pretty clever. He said that without actually saying that Fring is back, but he did note that someone had figured that out.
Oh, it is Vince Gilligan. Cool. You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that show.
So, could be.
There's a show called what? It's After Saul or?
Talking Saul.
No,
I haven't watched that.
No, they only had that show after the first episode and I think after the last episode.
They had it almost every episode, I think, of
Walking
Dead. It was called Talking Dead.
Oh,
it was the same host and the same couch, you know? Yeah.
But yeah, in the earlier other one that I saw, I think Kim, you know, Ray Seahorn, the actress, she was the one that was on that one. And the one after the finale, Mike, what's his name? Jonathan Banks was the actor that was on that show. It was rather interesting. Banks's attitude toward his character made Banks to be out. To be very similar in personality to Ermentrout.
Yeah.
You know, I had the idea that maybe he'd be one of these totally different guys, you know, just kind of like, who's the guy that used to play the Fonz on Happy Days? Henry Winkler, you know, the Fonz was this, you know, supposed to be super cool biker guy with the leather jacket. And then Henry Winkler was always this super soft spoken person totally different from the Fonz. But Jonathan Banks was just like Mike Ermentrout, at least in that in that show. Yeah. He might have been a little meaner than Jonathan Banks.
Wow.
But he was probably just acting, you know.
So I sent an email to Lisa. Are we done? Can we move on?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't have to. I'm just curious.
No.
Okay.
I'm done. I think we're good there.
We're good until February when it comes out again.
It's all good, man. All right, Lisa, can you read this this intro on the next concept? The title of the show is Taxation is Slavery. Now, before she reads this, Jeremy, explain Taxation is Theft as the meme. Do we know who started that?
I don't know if it was any one person. I know my buddy Dave somehow ended up at the forefront. Dave actually ended up on the forefront of that somehow again. He always manages to do that. But it was just like a collaborative effort. Dave Painter, my buddy that I do the Seeds of Liberty with. And he, you know, he started trying to get them to push him out. It just really took off. So, I mean, you know, everybody was doing it.
It was getting mainstream coverage, like in in magazines and stuff.
And then at one point Judge Napolitano had said it on an interview that he had done recently. I guess I think Ron Paul actually also said it recently.
Well, the concept of taxation is theft, and even taxation is slavery is not new. I mean, there's a Wikipedia article on taxation is slavery, and probably one on taxation is theft, but it just became a meme, like hundreds of memes a day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Recently.
Do you need to explain a meme? Memes are photos or drawings or images with words on them people forward. That's not the original meaning.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. It's not the original meaning, but that's what it's come to mean. That I know. Just
come to mean.
Pictures with text. usually humorous or extremely biased, or both.
Yeah. Of course, taxation is theft is not legally correct, but it's the one that became popular.
Well, read my email. This is why I want to change it to taxation is slavery. And there is a Wikipedia page called Taxation as Slavery, and there's one called Taxation as Theft.
Yeah, but the correct meme would say taxation is robbery.
Right.
And that is the only straight on definition.
Wait, counselor.
Oh. Well, okay. I want to challenge the court on this, but go ahead, Randy. You can go first.
Well, no, if a theft is to appropriate the property of another person without their consent, you could,
like breaking into a house while people are at work.
Yeah, you could steal it. You could be a pickpocket. You could, or you know, you could, if you stuck a gun on somebody's face, that would also be stealing or theft. Stealing and theft, those words are equivalent. But what the government does is not mere stealing. It's stealing by force or threat of force. And that is the definition, the basic rock bottom definition of robbery is stealing by threat of force or theft by threat of force or force itself.
Yeah, and so you know what is theft?
Taxation is robbery.
Inflation is theft.
This is true.
Right?
Yes, because there's no threats or force involved. Yeah. Right.
So will you read that email there for me, Lisa, please? So
go ahead. Yeah, sure. It says taxation is theft is technically inaccurate. Theft is without force or threat of force, like someone breaking into a house and stealing from the house while the residents are at work. Taxation is technically robbery, since it comes with the threat of murder if you don't comply, although inflation is robbery. But taxation as robbery doesn't have the same ring as taxation as slavery or even taxation as theft. Taxation is slavery, since slavery is the stealing of your labor while making it difficult and illegal to opt out.
Yep. And so I posted the other day on the interwebs, hey, let's make memes that say taxation is slavery instead. And several people ran with it, including our friend Anarcho Babe Cheryl, who made about 40 of them in a couple hours. Did you guys see that happen?
Yeah. I didn't see it happen. I woke up to it. It was the first thing I saw on my feed. Yeah.
And so we're putting one of hers in the show notes tonight. And mine, which is a picture of an elephant sitting on a man, and it says, taxation is heft.
I saw that one. That is funny.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, now the one thing I would like to ask you, Randy, because I agree with the robbery thing. That makes sense. I always thought as far as the whole taxation of theft thing, I always thought it was actually more akin to extortion because of the threat of force and the fact that almost every definition of extortion includes the phrase usually for political means or political aims. Something like that.
Well, there could be an extortion there, but that even has less cachet as a meme than robbery.
Yeah. I was just talking about the accuracy of it.
And as Nima Vedati and I said on a Fiends episode about 5 years ago, if you did what the government did, you'd be in prison.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
I love it.
Freedom Fiends. We're back from the market. And Michael has stepped away, but I'm here. I'm Randy England, here with Lisa and Jeremy. And we were going to... There was something that you brought up, Lisa, about... something that's happening apparently for the first time of some victims of CIA torture being allowed to sue their torturers or something like that.
Talk
about
really surprised
that,
me.
I think.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, maybe like 2 years ago, the Senate, I guess, came out with this torture report, you know, that it kind of covered what the CIA had been doing, you know, all kinds of really horrible and unethical and terrible things to detainees. And the headline is Victims of Brutal CIA Interrogation Win Landmark Ruling to Sue Black Site Psychologists. So, the court ruled that some CIA torture victims are going to be allowed to sue two psychologists who designed and operated the agency's brutal interrogation program. So last Friday, they ruled that two men and then the family of a deceased man have the right to hold those individuals accountable for the program that led to their abuse. Now, one of the men died in 2002 from hypothermia, dehydration, and exposure. His family was never officially notified of his death, and they don't even have his remains. They never were given those.
Still,
and those were psychological techniques.
Let's see. The methods were developed.
They are.
Yeah, they were developed by James Elmer Mitchell and John Bruce Jensen, two CIA contracted psychologists. They're being sued under the Alien Tort Statute for their commission of torture, cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment, non-consensual human experimentation, and war crimes. They were paid over $80 million by the U.S. government to design the torture program.
Wow.
And did they also participate in it?
Well, I'd heard that they did, but this story that I have here, I've read two stories on this from two different sources, and it does say they personally took part in it.
Well, you would think that they would have to. I mean, if all they did was write a paper or something, and then the CIA looked at that and said, hey, we can use that for torture stuff, you know, to get information. But they're saying that perhaps they participated.
Right, yeah. And I don't know if they were psychiatrists or psychologists, and I don't know. I would assume that they're all held to the same oath, you know, not to do any harm to patients, and so this would be
Hippocratic oath, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Do well. Psychiatrists have that oath. Do psychologists have that? Or
I don't know
either. I don't know what they have.
Yeah, well,
we took calls, we could have a psychologist call in and
somebody tweet one of us.
give us the ethical ruling on that. I thought it was kind of interesting that. You know, of course, no one has been willing to bring criminal charges against these guys because it would have to be only the U.S. government would be able to do that. But I'm thinking if these guys, I gather that what the judge has ruled is that, yes, you can go ahead and try to sue them. And they're thinking, well, that way we can go through the discovery and we can interview these guys and we can collect evidence from the government. I mean, I don't know if that would really end up happening or if the government would still be able to come and, you know, interpose in, objections, you know, to the discovery requests. And I really think, I mean, two of the people that you normally can get to sit down and they have to spill their guts to you are the defendants in a civil case. But I'm thinking these guys are going to take the Fifth Amendment when you try to question them. Right. And they're going to say, I'm sorry, I refuse to answer that on the grounds it may tend to incriminate me. Because if the government wanted to, you know, prosecute me for crimes against humanity or something, that could be used against me. Even, of course, the government is just as guilty as they are.
Oh, yeah. Whatever
they were doing, the government, it was all done under the government's authority.
Yep.
So I don't know. You know, it's interesting that it got, apparently this got farther than other cases have gotten, but I don't know if it's going to get them anywhere or not. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And
I don't know enough about the case.
It says this is the first lawsuit that will hold anybody responsible for the program. So we'll see where it goes.
I hope it does. I hope it goes. Yes.
But as you pointed out, it's a contractor and not a state agent.
And we'll be back soon.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Freedom Fiends are back. And we have a correction to make. We got a message from a listener who was a little bit bent out of shape. But Lisa, you mispronounced a word or something. Is that right, Lisa?
Did.
And you wanted to confess. What was that?
I don't remember what the word was. I'm scared to say it now. I'll probably say it.
All right. For every word that any of us may have mispronounced in the last section, we're sorry. Oh, I know what the word was. It was the word statute. I don't remember what you said, but it was the word statute.
I don't know what I said. I said statute. No, I don't know what I said.
It isn't important, but I know it was really embarrassing for you. And so just good to get that out of the way.
Moving on.
Moving on from the, I think we were talking about the light subject of the torture victims.
Yeah.
And Lisa, you had one other, there was an article about the libertarian, the race for the libertarian nomination that I think, you sent that. I got a copy of it, and I think that Jeremy did yes. too. Something about how most Americans actually are libertarians.
That's what Gary Johnson told RT, Russia Today.
Russia Today.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They interviewed him.
Okay, I haven't read the thing, so you kind of just run with what was that one about?
He told them that most Americans are libertarians, which means fiscally conservative and socially liberal, but they don't realize there's a party that represents that philosophy.
He really said that?
He apparently said that.
Fiscally conservative, socially liberal.
That is so not the definition of a libertarian. I hate people who use that as their excuse for claiming the title libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. He's talking about that lower down. I'm looking the Tea Party, and he said they asked like, are Tea Party people, are they libertarians or something? He goes, no, the Tea Party. See, they can't be libertarians because they turned out to be socially conservative. So apparently, in his view,
what
only a liberal can be a libertarian, and a conservative can't be a libertarian.
Oh my goodness!
You know, the thing that really bugs me about that is that that's almost exactly the opposite of the truth. In the sense that if you're liberal on any subject, I don't care what it is, you know, but if you're liberal about whether people should shovel their sidewalks or not, okay, and you're the kind of guy that says, I don't care, everybody just do whatever they want. You know, I don't care about shoveling my sidewalk when it snows, and I don't care if you shovel yours. And then you realize that you don't want to have a law about shoveling sidewalks, and then you go, hey, I guess that makes me a libertarian. And I'm thinking, you're saying you're a libertarian because, number one, you have no standards, and therefore you don't want to enforce any standards, and now you're a libertarian. And I'm thinking the definition of a libertarian is probably better expressed by a person who thinks you ought to do that thing, you know, shovel the walk, or ought to not smoke dope, or ought to not do this vice like gamble. You think that you shouldn't do it, or people shouldn't do it, or you shouldn't do it, but you don't want to pass a law against it. Now, that's a libertarian.
Yes.
Because you'd be willing, you're not willing to outlaw something that you disapprove. You know, if you're sitting around a campfire and some guy's next to you and he says that he's a libertarian, and then you scratch him a little more and find out that all he wants is for pot to be legalized. And that's as far as his libertarian goes. You know, he just wants to say, you're not a libertarian. You're just a pothead, you know. I mean, I've said that several times, you know, to people, you know, who think they're libertarians. And, you know, for Gary Johnson to say, well, you couldn't be a social conservative and be a libertarian. I mean, he doesn't know me. I'm a pretty square guy. And as a libertarian, I got a list, you know, that's just so long, I don't know the end of it, of things that I don't approve of, but I would never want to have a law against it. You know, it's just, it's not right. So I'm not sure if this guy, I wonder what he meant. Well, when he said that the majority of Americans are libertarians, do you think he meant that the majority are fiscally conservative and socially liberal?
Well, I guess that's what he's trying to say, but that's like you were pointing out with the, you know, not accepting of socially conservative. Well, on the flip side of that, does he also rule out anybody who's, I guess, what, liberally conservative? I don't know, like, on the, whatever the flip, whatever the opposite side of that, like,
no, fiscally profligate would be the other word.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, for the liberal side, does he rule them out too? So how does he have anywhere near 90%? I don't know what he's talking about. I often don't know what he's talking about. I mean, this is also the guy
who's talking about.
that would make sense. He's also the one who said that he believes in the nap, but when it comes to the Constitution, what was the phrase he used? It's over his head. So
yeah, what?
He, which is anybody who has an issue with the nap, with the non-aggression principle, just I laugh at, because I'm like, you understand that that is the fundamental principle of the ideology, correct? So if you have an issue with it, you can want to be a libertarian, but you're not really.
And it's not safe. If you reject the non-aggression principle, then you are just going to come off with, if someone asks you or challenges you to define what a libertarian is, there's no telling where you're going to go.
That's so true.
You know, seriously, even a true minarchist who wants the smallest government possible can still say, and I want as much of the non-aggression principle as possible. And they're only failing in that, at least in my view, is that they're just not willing to go all the way, but at least they get it. Mm-hmm. But when you're supposedly a libertarian, but you think that it's about, you know, I hear a lot of people, you know, they particularly critics of libertarianism or anarchism or whatever they're calling it, the critics will say, well, libertarianism is just simply about individualism. And I'm thinking, I don't think that's the definition. That's not that doesn't come out of the non-aggression principle. I mean, sure, you can wave a flag that says don't tread on me, and I can wave a flag that says don't tread on your neighbor. So, you know, it can go either way, and I don't have to be some selfish individualist to be against the state. So I don't know, you know, where the guy's going. I know plenty of people, and I had a bit of an argument with one of my sons over the weekend. Not an argument. It was a friendly discussion about, you know, whether Johnson, you know, was a fit for the Libertarian Party. And I said, yeah, he's about as good a fit for the Libertarians as if we ran John McCain in the Republican Party this year. I mean, he's about that exciting. And if he's in there, and yeah, they said this is the year, you know, if people hate having Hillary on one side and Trump on the other, why, Gary Johnson, instead of getting 2%, why, he could get 4% this year. And isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to get excited about it. I'm afraid I'm going to go into this election just like I've been going to all the recent ones, where you start in and I say, well, it doesn't matter what happens. I said, I'm not going to be disappointed, because it couldn't possibly be any worse than I'm expecting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
So anyway, what else did you note about that article, Lisa?
Well, really, just Gary Johnson kind of amuses me. So back in 2012, when he ran, I thought about voting for him, because it was when I was, you know, before I had transitioned to, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to vote anymore. This whole system is, you know, completely rigged and corrupt. And so I don't know. The part about the Tea Party really baffled me. I you know, I guess the interviewer brought that up, not Gary Johnson, but yeah, the social conservatism part, huh? Like, this whole article just baffled me, and then it did remind me of what Jeremy mentioned earlier, or no, I'm sorry, I think you brought it up, Randy, but I remember talking to Jeremy about this when it happened, about Gary Johnson saying that the nap was over his head and he didn't understand it. And I don't know. Now I feel kind of like, you know, libertarians are getting such a bad reputation now.
He's like the more peaceful Bob Barr, essentially, right? That's what he would be as a libertarian candidate, because he's not a libertarian.
He's a higher Bob Barr.
Yeah.
And then we've got he who must, the other person that we don't really talk about anymore, who's running also.
His big push is trying to get the libertarians on the national platform, you know, to get the third party. And, you know, I see what they're trying to do, but they've been trying to do it for so long. And like you said, they've had to dilute things so badly, because somebody like Gary Johnson is often considered the front runner and was the nominee last time. Mm-hmm. So, and he's not a libertarian. So if that's what you're promoting, and, you know, Randy mentioned earlier the people like that are just interested in the drug laws, and that's all they care about, you know, so you're just a stoner. You're not actually a libertarian. There's so many people like that, and that's what the focus is always on. So the people that could possibly be looking to not even just the Libertarian Party, but just libertarian in general, can easily get turned off, because that's always what, you know, the focus is always on the small vocal minority that chases everybody else away, because they're the crazy people.
Yeah, they can be turned off. And if you laid it out like, hey, leave people alone, that might resonate with them a little better than, hey, I want to get high. There's plenty of people. Right. I mean, the last thing that I came to before I said, hey, man, you're a libertarian, was the drug thing. And part of it was because I was prosecutor. And, I prosecuted those cases, but after I eventually figured out that it was pointless, and I came all the way in at that point. And I have to be other people that are put off by that way too long than they need to be.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
So we have to talk about this poor girl who is a Ted Cruz lookalike. And I don't even know if I should say poor girl, because she's about to be rolling in some money because she looks like Ted Cruz. So she was on Maury Povich, and, you know, some astute viewers noticed, like, hey, this chick looks like Ted Cruz, like, just like him. And so, of course, there was, I guess, memes going around about her. Is that what you said, Jeremy, a couple days ago?
Yeah, that's what I first saw. People had found it, immediately screenshotted it, and put it up to a picture of Cruz, and were passing it around. And it is that the similarities are rather striking.
it really is. I thought when I first saw the picture, I thought it was photoshopped, so I kind of disregarded it. And then I saw this headline, and I was like, "Oh no! This is a real thing."
Yeah, it's not a stretch. It's not a stretch. They were talking separated at birth here.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's like fraternal twins separated at birth. Like, it's really, it's a close match.
Yeah, so she was on Maury Povich because her fiance thought that, you know, he might not be the father of their child. So everything was resolved in a typical Maury fashion when she passed a lie detector test. And DNA tests showed that her 3-month-old son was this guy, Freddy's.
Was that a happy ending, though, right?
Well, that was a happy ending, but then it got happier because... I can't even say it. she's gonna... She got a job offer. Let's put it that way.
she's been offered a job to do porn for $10,000 for 6 minutes worth of work, which works out to what's that? $1,666.66 a minute. It's Well, like I said, you know, she was on the Maury Povich show because her fiance thought she was cheating on him. I don't know exactly how bright her future was to begin with, so I'm sure $10,000 seems like a lot of money to her. But
it says that
fine with it.
And the company that was making the movie, was that X Hamster? Is that what the name of that is?
Yeah, and that made me laugh for obvious reasons.
And the spokesman for the company said, I think a lot of ex-hamster viewers really wanted to see her in action.
Yeah, and apparently this will not be her first rodeo. She's made tapes before, but this will be the first time that millions of people potentially will be watching. And she said she's fine with this because it's going to support her family. She wants her son to have whatever he wants.
As long as it doesn't cost more than $10,000.
Right. I'm thinking maybe her son doesn't want his mom to do this. I mean, he's too young to know right now, but I don't know. It's just a guess.
The boyfriend said accepting the offer was a no-brainer when they saw how much they would get. We want to buy a truck, pay off the house, and we might get married. And I never had anyone say, here's $10,000, go make a sex tape.
And I hope they never say it again. It's kind of exciting and shocking to know she's famous. She's more famous than Madonna. I'm with a star, he said.
He is.
Well, see, the funny thing is they were on Maury, and if he's accusing her of cheating, like, you can imagine the scenario where he was actually hoping that he would get proven right so he could get rid of her, and now what? So what else is he going to do? Of course he has to go, yeah, this is great, because now I'll stick around because the kid is mine, and at least I get some money out of the deal.
Yeah. He gets to be a movie star.
But he wants to pay off the house, get married, and buy a truck. Where does he live that he thinks $10,000 is going to get him that? Unless the house is a cardboard box. I don't know.
Is he hired too? Is that what it was?
I think, yeah. I think he gets to be in your co-star.
Well, then I can understand that. If it's the two of them, that's, I mean, you know. Can't say I wouldn't do that in that scenario. With my if I don't have to be with other partners or, you know, other people, or my partner doesn't have to be with other people, then...
Well, maybe you'll get an offer soon. You know?
Well, yeah. I wasn't looking for an offer. I was just saying.
Well, you know, it's out there now. Yeah.
No comment. Right. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Looks like we're at the end of another Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, good times.
And thank you, folks. It's been fun.
Worms.
Worms.